We get confused by our fans.
We do sound the same.
Yeah, we do. We do both have the made-up gay voice. The funniest tweet I saw today.
And out came talk.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Or maybe a better way to say hello would be, hello, you fucking fat loser. You can do
it. God, it was so stupid. No, actually, the Birdman voice is slay. I like the Birdman voice.
No, shut the fuck up. Welcome to our show, you dumb, pretentious loser babies. This is Straight People Movies. Okay, I'll stop. I'm sorry. You're laughing because it's so stupid and bad. But that's just like
it's so good.
It's my comedic style. It's like being dumb and bad at everything. Hi, everyone. Yeah, this is Straight People Movies.
Hi.
This is the podcast where each week we two gays, we explore movies straight people love, and we ask why.
Why? That was a gift from the crew. They'll get mad. I think that might have been my favorite line of the whole movie.
That's the gayest line in the movie for sure. I'm Kirk Van Sickle.
I'm Dylan Garcia.
And welcome. We're starting another one of our unofficial, unadvertised series that we like to do. This one is going to last all the way up to that very special night on March 12th. That's right. We're doing an Oscar series this year, everyone.
Yes.
Where we...
Oh, my God. I was... real quick, my family, my in-laws and stuff are planning on going to the horse races in Arkansas, and they're like, do any weekends in March work for you? And I'm like, I can't do the 12th. I have something that day.
You're like, I have something happening that day. So important.
I'm busy. I am booked.
Well, that's why, because it's where we got the Oscar nominations out. The Oscars night is coming up soon, and we thought it would be fun to do a series on the straightest best picture winners of all time.
Oh, baby. And there are 98 straight best picture winners. No, 97 minus
Moonlight. There's a couple gay ones, but I would say the vast majority are very straight. That's the kind of irony about the Oscars, is it's like a thing that only the gay men seem to really enjoy. But like when you look at the list, when you look at the material, it's like you got... all the musicals from the 60s, gay. You got Midnight Cowboy. You got Moonlight.
Silence of the Lambs,
and Shakespeare in Love. And that pretty much covers all the gay best picture
winners.
That's
it. You did it.
Yeah, the rest of them. Dances with Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Dances with Wolves.
American Beauty.
Ooh. Oh, ooh. That is straight, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's so straight.
Unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately.
Straight. Damn. But what I love about American Beauty is that Mina Suvari thinks she's in a different, much gayer movie with her performance.
It's so funny that Sam Mendes is someone who has been nominated for Best Picture a bunch, won Best Director, has so many movies, so iconic, and then he made a movie this year, Empire of Light, that five people saw and everyone hated it.
I mean, and God, the trailer just did not do a good job of making me want to go see it. That's for damn sure.
Nope. I was so worried because, I think he's iconic. He's made a bunch of iconic movies.
He made American Beauty, and I think, like, 1917 would be, like, maybe iconic, but, like, Road
and
to Perdition.
Skyfall.
Oh, I always forget he did Skyfall.
Skyfall,
or how
Revolutionary
about...
Road. Oh my God, Jarhead, so good.
Ugh. Ugh. I don't know, girly. I don't know, girly pop. I don't know about this one.
Ooh, Jarhead's good.
What about Away We Go with John Krasinski and Maya Rudolph? The
also a good
the proto Come On, Come On for the 2000s generation.
But yeah, we're starting off with a doozy. It's a movie that I don't. What is the cultural legacy of this movie?
Nothing. That is what's so fascinating about this movie. We'll get way more into it, but like, can you think of a more bizarre Best Picture winner that people do not talk about, care about, not influenced by? No one has a peep up. No one has made a peep about this movie since 2015. Like, I don't think anyone gives a shit about this movie anymore.
It's crazy too, because also the other nominees in it, in that category for Best Picture, besides maybe one or two, completely forgotten. Or not completely forgotten. It is, they're all iconic.
Yeah.
Like, they're all, like, generational movies, and then the one that won Best Picture is, like, this truly insane movie that's, like, unhinged. I'm shocked that it won Best Picture.
I'm shocked that it won Best Picture. It was supposed to be the Michael Keaton renaissance. Didn't work. Also, completely forgot that Miss Naomi Watts was in this movie. How did I forget that Naomi Watts was in this movie? I literally turned it on, and in the beginning, did they show the cast at the beginning? I think they showed, no, they didn't show the, no, they did show the names. And I was like,
they show the names.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Insane. Yeah. Insane. And yeah, and it has a bad Emma Stone performance.
Truly one of
Dylan.
It's like, man, she
Dylan. I thought it was bad when I saw it in theaters. It is astounding to me that she got nominated for an Oscar for that performance.
It is theater camp, High School Musical level acting.
It's so bad. And I kind of famously don't like love Emma Stone. I didn't like her until The Favorite, which she's brilliant in.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited for her to be in more Lanthimos movies, because I think he knows what to do too. With her. But yeah, what a wild movie. And then it's like, you know what?
Let's get into it.
Just kind of want to get into it, it sounds like. So why don't you give the people a little intro, and then we'll just delve into Miss Birdman.
Birdman. So this week we watched Birdman, or in parentheses, The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, directed by Alejandro Iñárritu and starring Michael Keaton, Zach Galifianakis, Emma Stone, Naomi Watts, Edward Norton, and Andrea Riseborough.
Academy Award nominee Andrea Riseborough.
It's crazy that everyone in this movie, except for Zach Galifianakis, has an Oscar nomination.
I also forgot that Zach Galifianakis was in this fucking movie, and I think that was during the time that people cared about him, so that was like a big selling factor on the movie when it was being advertised, is that he was in it.
And I would say he's probably like he's in it for so much. He's probably in it more than Naomi Watts.
I would say, like for me, it's like Michael Keaton, Edward Norton, Zach Galifianakis. Mm-hmm. For like, if we were to actually bill it by screen time.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Wild.
And it's about a washed-up superhero actor who attempts to stage a Broadway play and definitely isn't a cry for help from Iñárritu.
No way.
And no way. This is not a thinly veiled metaphor for anything.
Yeah, he's not really he's not really like the king of like a thickly veiled metaphor.
For real. Well, I just watched Bardo in my preparation for this, and also because it got nominated. It's like not as annoying as Birdman. It's like, it's annoying, but like, it's more surreal, and like the visuals are kind of more cool. And
yeah,
I don't know. I wasn't as hard on Bardo as I thought I would be. I thought I would really hate it, but also he has not gotten over his shit. Apparently, apparently winning two Best Director Oscars back to back like wasn't enough for him to like hate Hollywood. Like, girl, they love you. Why? What is wrong with you?
I still think that the craziest thing about this movie is that this movie is one giant spit in the face of like film criticism, and yet film critics like sucked this movie's dick. And I just think that is like the saddest thing on the fucking planet.
Well, we're going to talk about one very famous dissenting review.
Oh, I can't wait. Later on. I can't wait. We get to talk about one of our favorite
things. Truly one of
the
top five tweets. It's one of the greatest things that's ever happened, and we will talk about it. I'm so excited.
That's like kind of the main reason why I think we're doing this episode.
For real. Talk about it. Talk about this. They say film criticism's dead. I mean, it is dead because that site no longer exists. But like, that was the last time I was like excited about a piece of criticism.
Oh, yeah, me too.
God, it was so good. And you can watch this on HBO Max. It was not available on HBO Max when I restreamed it, but they added it just in time for this podcast.
So cute. Maybe people will actually start talking about it again. Who knows?
Yeah.
For its 9-year anniversary.
Birdman. Okay.
This is a movie.
I want to start off with some compliments.
Yeah, let's start off with some compliments. I agree.
I think Edward Norton is phenomenal in it.
He's so good in this movie.
Like,
so good.
My favorite Edward Norton performance.
I think for me, and not everyone's like bad in this movie, but for me, he's like head and shoulders above everyone else in it. Like, he is like keyed into it, like gets it, gets it. Yeah, totally.
He's so, it's unreal. That his first scene, they're like rehearsing with Michael Keaton, is so fucking good. Teach that in class. It's incredible. So good.
Love it.
In the first half of this movie, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Here's the thing.
And then once it starts to tighten and you realize what this movie is, like, capital A about, it's the most eye-rolling, cringe,
it's so
annoying, self-obsessed piece of shit in the entire world.
This movie is so stupid, Dylan. Like, the one compliment I would give it, other than Edward Norton's really good performance in it, is that it is entertaining to watch. I got a little bored near the end, but overall, it's a pretty easy watch. It's entertaining. It keeps its rhythm going. Other than that, let's talk about... First off, I think we need to talk about... People, like, liked this movie, and people, like, still like this movie. I went on Letterboxd to give it a very generous 2.5, I think. And it's great. Five stars. Like, from people I respect.
Unreal.
They need to rewatch this movie. I don't know if this is, like, a rating from a long time ago or what, but they need to rewatch it because, girl, it did not hold up. I actually think I disliked it more this time around.
Yes, I did. 100% did. I thought it was... It's just, once the theater critic comes into play,
it's so bad.
It's over. The movie is over. Washed.
It's over. I think that, like, it is one of the most, like, immature, dumb, stupid, not thought through, shallow, like, exercises in anti-criticism. It's just so funny to me because, to me, like, sure, there's, like, a battle sometimes between, like, art critics and art itself. But at the most, for the most part, like, that's a symbiotic relationship, man. Like,
yeah,
art criticism, like, is beautiful. It, like, sometimes it's up to the critic to, like, be the one that, like, shows how beautiful or moving something can be and gives it a bigger context. Because sometimes the filmmaker, like, or artist, it's like they have a vision and then the critic expounds upon that. And I think that a critic is a really important role in art, and I just think that, like, sure, you could argue that it's Michael Keaton's character that's, like, shitting on Lindsay Duncan's character, but it's so clear, like you said in the scene, that it's, like, very much, like, this is Alejandro's, like, main point, which is so funny, because, like, when has anyone ever hated one of his movies?
For real. That's the fucking thing. He always got nominated for Oscars. He always was awarded. He, like, it's not like... It would make sense if, like, Uwe Boll made this movie.
Yeah.
Or, like, if, like...
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau made this exact movie, it would make sense. But, like, you can't have one of the most critically acclaimed directors make this. It makes no fucking sense. It's
crazy. I also think what made it age really poorly, too, is a lot of the anti... And it's so funny because, you know, I'm so anti-Marvel and so anti... that sort of stuff, but I actually found a lot of its, like, anti-Marvelness to be really cringy in the movie.
Yes,
it was just like, okay, like, so what? And all these, like, pop culture references I thought were really cringy. It reminded me that the early 2010s was, like, an era of pop culture references constantly being in film, and I blame Lena Dunham for that. And it just sometimes it works, like in Girls, doesn't work in this, I don't think. And
no.
Let's get to the first biggest, craziest thing about the acclaim for this movie. I cannot believe that this won Best Original Screenplay at the Oscars. Out of everything it won, what the actual fuck. The dialogue in this movie is so bad for the most part.
It is every individual interaction between two characters in this movie is so... It feels like a writing camp. Like, it feels like shit that I would write in college.
It's so, like, college student. It's so phony. None of the characters feel like real people. They feel like symbols of art versus commerce. You know, it's just like, girl.
Yeah,
it,
like, no theater critic in the entire world, or critic in general, that's like... It's not like... The theater critic in the movie is like some small town critic or whatever for like the fucking the Charlottesville Gazette or whatever. It's like New York Times.
Yeah.
No, like, professional full-time critic would tell the subject of their piece, I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to end your career. I'm going to, like, because they know that that's not how criticism works.
Yeah.
And like the fact that he, that is like in there and it's like not ironic and not a joke is like, laughable.
I know. And then the fucking ending being that, like, because he blew his fucking, like, nose off during the play for real, like, that's why she wants to, like, actually acclaim his play. I was like, this literally feels like it was written by a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
And I understand that it's fantastical and surreal, and he, like, flies with Birdman at the end, but the ideas in this film are so clearly meant to be, like, real and grounded in the real world and in art and in filmmaking and theater that it's hard for me to, like, overlook these details. And I'm so surprised that no one else, except for the review we'll get to shortly, did. Like, it's like the, it's like almost like that review was the only one that saw the light with this. It's like, what the fuck is this shit?
Real. And back to the Oscar for screenplay, the ones that it beat Boyhood, incredible screenplay. It beat Foxcatcher, which I love Foxcatcher. I think Foxcatcher is such an underrated movie that's like should have won Best Picture. Like, it's maybe my favorite of the movies nominated for stuff. Grand Budapest Hotel.
Great script.
A movie that I think is great script. Not my favorite Wes Anderson, but so lively, so much fun. And then Nightcrawler, which is like
such a fucking cool
movie.
I'm shocked that this beat Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler.
Yes.
Now that's a movie that takes really big swings, has really wild dialogue, but it all feels grounded and executed in a way that makes sense for the film, like the film's world. And I just kept thinking the whole time I was watching Birdman again, like what is this trying to be? Because to me, I found the dialogue so crass and unnecessarily crude and just like not funny, which was the biggest offense of it all. Did you only laughed at Edward Norton because he like served in this movie and was hilarious.
When Edward Norton stands up with his boner, it's so funny.
That part was great. And there's a couple of other parts that are great, but, like, I don't blame Michael Keaton for his performance because I just hate the way he's written. I hate his character and the way he's written, but he does the best he can. I think the biggest offense this movie has, and I'm going to be that girl, is, my God, are these female characters written so badly? Like,
oh, my God. Yeah, they're all in relation to the men in the movie. It's offensive. It's so... It's weird. It's weird.
Miss Naomi Watts.
None of the women in the movie have their own lives. Like they're all somehow connected to another man in the movie.
Naomi Watts literally throws a temper tantrum because she like doesn't feel like anyone ever tells her that she's good, and then her and Andrew Riseborough make out.
Yeah,
that was like, I was like, oh my God, it's like at least David Lynch like covers up his like boner fantasies with like art and like actual surrealism. But that one was like real clear what was going on here. Alejandro was like, I want to make Naomi and Andrew make out because that'd be pretty hot, you know. Just it's just scuzzy and
so
gross, and
it's so dumb.
I just like felt embarrassed for Naomi. She's also really bad in it.
She is not very good in this movie.
Yeah, and it's just Andrea's great in it though. Unrecognizable. Oh, yeah, she's got to be the most chameleonic actress of our time. Like,
oh yeah.
I literally looked her up after everyone was like talking about that, and I was like, wait a fucking second. She was in that? That was her.
You've seen so many of these movies. Yeah.
She literally, I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. She's kind of Fiona Apple a little bit, hasn't she?
She's a little Fiona Appled out.
Cause I'm like,
yeah.
Ooh, girl. Like it's like Black Mirror episode on. I'm like,
I'm on the Wikipedia page for Andrea Riseborough, and she has two pictures up. Her main picture is very old Hollywood glam, Barry Rita Hayworth, big hair, jewels, looks great. And then the other one, she looks like Tabitha Coffey from Tabitha Takes Over on Bravo.
Yeah.
Like it is like It's a different person.
Yeah, it is. And like, whatever. I'm not like gonna sit here and like judge someone's like, whatever.
She's iconic. But we love it.
She was in Happy Go Lucky.
Yeah.
Mama.
She was she's in WE.
She's randomly in Oblivion.
Yeah.
She was in the Grudge remake that no one saw. Nocturnal
Animals.
Like, what the hell? It's just so crazy.
Is this our second? Oh yeah, this is our second Andrea Riseborough movie because we also did Mandy.
Yeah, wild, wow. But yeah, damn. No, it just yeah, this movie, yeah, it's badly written. It's not smart. It's not funny. It's crude. It's immature. Yeah, I really don't understand the appeal. And it's so funny because people were talking about on Twitter the other day that apparently like Alejandro told like Mike Nichols or somebody like right before he died that he was going to make this movie one take. And Mike Nichols was like, that's a horrible idea. Don't do that. And it's so funny because it's like Mike Nichols is like, right. But like also he was wrong because this won Best Picture somehow. But like,
yeah,
the one take is the most unnecessary. Like, what was the point of making this movie one take? Like, what did that add to anything? Other than to make you go, oh, shit. Oh,
it's like, that's it. It's supposed to, it's like, it's things that are like, aren't done in movies that often because they're like, kind of, they are like, not hard as in like, and they are kind of difficult to pull off, you know.
They are difficult to pull off.
But
it's also
like, but no one does them for like, because the payoff isn't that great. Like having constant one shot and then having the entire score be like jazz drumming.
Yeah.
Like, the reason people don't do it is not because it's like, hard and impressive or whatever. It's because it's just like the results aren't as like cool as you think they would be.
Yeah, and here's the thing, if we want to talk about like long take movies, I do think there's a couple of long take movies that I think it works or it's really cool. Like have you ever seen Victoria?
Mm-mm.
It's this movie.
Is that the one that's like it's like overnight or whatever?
It's all one take.
Yes,
over like 2 hours, and it's actually one take. It's not a fake one take like Birdman is. And that one works because the whole movie is basically like this girl's out and about in like Germany. She's like visiting from Spain and she somehow gets herself into like this crazy situation. I don't want to spoil it, but
yeah.
And it just like it's such a high adrenaline, like the real time of it made it more stressful to watch because you're like, oh my God, we went from here to here. Like, and it all makes sense and it all felt real and it's wild. And then something else that I think is a long take, but I think there are fake cuts in it, just like Birdman, is Rope, Alfred Hitchcock's Rope.
Yeah,
the first
Rope
long take rules. Movie of all time. And that movie rules. And I don't know, with Rope, it's like, it is kind of a flex, I think, on Hitchcock's part, trying to use technology to make it look like it's one take. And I did think he kind of wanted to lean into the playness of it. But I just don't think that like, it felt as like, I don't know. I do feel like Birdman's constantly rubbing it in your face. Like it's constantly like, ha-ha. This is one
it's the kind of thing where people like, I feel like when you like read like about music in Reddit, like people on Reddit, if you read like our music, people always love like very virtuosic, big guitars, like Dream Theater and shit like that. And it's like, if you listen to music where it's all guitar solos and all 12 minute long, like prog suites, it gets boring really quickly.
Totally. I completely agree.
Like, it doesn't need to be that.
Right. It's like, I listened to Sonic Youth's Washing Machine today, and it's like the Diamond Sea only works because there's a bunch of other songs that are not as long before it. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know? It's like, you got to work your way up to the 20-minute long banger at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think that everything about this movie, technically, writing-wise, it all just feels really like... You know what I said to Jesus, and I think this is the most accurate sentence I could say about Birdman? It's a movie that thinks it's pretentious, but it's actually not that pretentious, and that's what makes it insufferable. It's like, the movie thinks it's really smart, but in actuality, the movie's really fucking stupid and dumb, and it feels like it needs to like hold your hand through the narrative because we're not going to get it or something. And it's like, no, we get
it. I wish it was more pretentious.
Me too. I was like,
it's not pretentious enough.
It's like, okay, like a fake long take, some jazz drumming and like, I don't know, like a sequence where like he's being bullied by his like Birdman character. I don't know. It's just like, come on, girl.
Look, if you're making a play that's an adapt, or if you're making a movie that's about a real life piece of art and I know what it is not pretentious enough, because I have read What We Talk About When We Talk About Love, therefore, and I'm stupid as fuck, and I'm very dumb, so if I am familiar with the work, then it is not pretentious.
I would just put this into, like, you know, another film that came out this year that I think kind of has a lot in common with this film is Whiplash, where I prefer Whiplash to this movie, so Chazelle heads don't come after me. But it's just that
same.
It's a similar thing where, like, I feel like Whiplash presents itself a little bit like it's, like, super... There's just this kind of, like, style to it, like Birdman, where it feels a little, like, in your face. Like, a little, like, ha, look what I can do. There's something just very, like, kind of, like, flexy about the whole thing. And and it has a similar thing where, like, I think it deals with some themes about art that are maybe a little complex. But the way the movie presents it is very straightforward and you can, like, follow it. But the difference is that Whiplash, like, doesn't dress it up too much. It's, like... It kind of just lays it all out there. And then you're like, oh, like, do all great artists need to be abused? And then you ask yourself these questions afterwards. Birdman, like, answers all the questions for you in a way that's, like, not interesting. And then at the end of the movie, you're like, yeah, like, I get Alejandro's point of view on this stuff, but I'm not left pondering anything.
You know? I think kind of the difference between Birdman and Whiplash is that, like, Whiplash is, like, about, like, the obsession of art by an artist and, like, what happens whenever you let it take over your life. Whereas, like, if I feel like in Birdman, like, Michael Keaton's character, it doesn't really feel that vital to me. Like, him putting on this play, like, doesn't feel like it feels like he's just, like, it's presented as, like, I'm finally gonna be taken seriously or whatever, but it's like it feels like if this play doesn't work out,
Well, yeah, whatever. Because it's like, okay, if this movie is, like, with all the pop culture references, it's hard not to feel like it's really grounded in reality, like, in our world. And it's just, like, in whose, like, right mind is doing a play adaptation of Raymond Carver gonna, like, put their, like, name on the map? Like, it's like, you lost me already. It's like, this is, like, what comeback, like, what kind of comeback will this give him? I guess he's looking for, like, critical acclaim, and I think that's the direction the movie's trying to go for. But it's like, I don't know, you could just, like, be in a fucking, like, Sean Baker movie. Like, I don't know, like, I just feel like there's, like, not, like, putting a play on in New York is, like, not where my mind would have gone if I was a washed up superhero actor. It's like, yeah, like, you need to, like, be Mickey Rourke by, like, Darren Aronofsky, you know, like, that's the answer.
Well, here. It's so funny because it's like, okay, so Michael Keaton is like presented like it's a thinly veiled, like, reference to Batman or whatever, because Michael Keaton played Batman.
Right.
And it's like, Michael Keaton got just as, if not more, acclaim the next year being in Spotlight, and he's, like, the 12th person in that movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, the real-life parallel of, like, Michael Keaton just could have given 15 minutes in a small indie movie and gotten just as much acclaim and praise.
Well, right, and that's the problem with this meta self-reflexive narrative is that then you find the holes in the movie, and then you find the holes in the making of the movie, because it's like everything is supposed to be like a reference to itself. So it's like, oh, Alejandro's like saving Michael Keaton's career, but in my mind I'm like, did Michael Keaton's career really need any like saving?
No, he was fine.
He was doing okay. He was in White Noise in 2004.
Yeah, I mean, like, he wasn't in great shit. Like, you know, he was working, though. That's the thing. He was, like, yeah, some, like, direct DVD stuff. He was in Cars. He did a lot of voice work. He was in the RoboCop stuff. Like, I guess this is his first sort of, like, big, like, actual...
arty movie.
Critically acclaimed arty movie since, like, Jackie Brown.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. And I feel like there's been, like, a... But, like, it's cool. It can be cool, though. Like, I think Mickey Rourke being saved by Darren Aronofsky and then fucking up his career right after it again is, like, that's badass, you know? And, like, I feel like we just got that with them. What's the movie? Brendan Fraser in The Whale, you know? Mm-hmm. Also Darren Aronofsky. Yeah. Darren Aronofsky's got a boner for doing that, doesn't he?
He loves doing it. He loves saving people.
But... I don't know. Yeah, I just feel like with Birdman, it just doesn't all coalesce. But we're in the minority here. That's the crazy part. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what... Like, if there's one movie on this planet, honestly, honest to God, and I hate a lot more movies than this one, but to me, this is the most egregious, like, I don't get why people like this movie.
I fully don't either. Like, I don't... Like, I already have movies about Hollywood and, like, art about Hollywood and art about art is already such a small audience because, like, I'm already immediately turned off by it in general.
Yeah.
And, like, I love this shit. I eat this shit up every day. All my podcasts listen to about movies and music and shit. Like, I love art. But like the second you start, like an artist complains about being an artist, I'm like, oh, I don't give a shit at all.
Yeah, me neither. I just think it's really like boring and lazy and stupid. And like, I guess I get why, I can kind of understand why like the Academy liked it. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess because it's like, it probably made them all feel really smug about themselves. But I don't really, I think for me, it's the critics. I think it's like regular audiences. Like, I don't understand like why Birdman resonated with them, but then like other more wacky movies of the same vein don't resonate with them. And I think it's because the movie's like crass. And I think it's because the movie like has Zach Galifianakis like saying dumb bullshit. Like, I just feel like it's because of that. And that's what really like makes me feel icky about the movie.
Like, this movie made $42 million in America. That's crazy. Which, like, is, compared to, let's look at Everything Everywhere All at Once, made, it made the same amount of money as Everything Everywhere All
at Once. So it was the Everything Everywhere All at Once of that year.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that there's a comparison to be made. A movie that would typically not be nominated for Oscars because it's too surreal and it's too strange and it's too crass, but then somehow everyone fell in love with it. And we'll see. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with Everything Everywhere's legacy. Only time will tell. But I will say that, like, the one thing I will say about Birdman is, where's the legacy? There's no legacy for this movie.
None.
No one. We were talking earlier about, like, why do people say no one talks about this movie? And I'm like, but literally no one talks about this movie. Whenever I bring up Birdman, people are just like, oh, I liked that movie. And I'm like, what a weird, tepid thing to say about this movie. Like, what?
For real.
How can you not have a strong opinion about this movie? Like, it is crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, why do straight people like this movie? And we talk about, like, we talk about meta a lot. And, like, this doesn't really feel, like, too meta. I feel like this draws the, it's, like, right halfway in between meta and reference.
Yeah.
But it's still self-referential. Right. So it's still straight.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like when gay people make self-referential work, they do it through, like, the, like, truly through the lens of another, and it's, like, way more oblique and weird, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, like, I see myself in, like, you know, the girl from Showgirls, you know? It's, like, that sort
of
thing.
Well, I think it's, and also, I think it's a movie that's, like, it's, since it's, like, specifically about, like, a superhero trying to be, like, taken seriously, it gives fuel to the fire that is people being like, you know who's actually good? Marvel actors.
Yeah. It's so weird to think that the landscape has changed so much since this movie came out when it comes to like the way we feel about like superhero actors. It's so interesting. But yeah, I think so that interesting. I do think that the self-referential nature of the film is pretty straight. Yeah.
It's just, it feels self-referential in a way that's like not, what's the word? You're not self-reflective at all.
No.
It's truly just being, referencing thine self.
I just think it's really boring when male writers and filmmakers, like the only flaw they ever get themselves is like they're a cheater and an alcoholic. Like I'm really like bored with that. Like,
it really is.
It's like, oh, my flaws are that I just like am an asshole who drinks too much and fucks a lot of women. And it's like, okay, honey, it was cute in the 40s when that was the issue that men had. But nowadays, it's just really sad. It's just,
it's
like
just sad.
It's like, maybe can your problem be, I'm trying to think of like men's problems that would be interesting.
Well, I think that's what's interesting about like Whiplash is that it does present like male obsession and like the need for like male validation from an older figure as like these psychotic deranged things that like a person shouldn't go through.
I will say that like I like what I liked about Whiplash is it kind of presented like this, I feel like we've seen a lot of movies of the psychotic female mentor relationship, you know, like Notes on a Scandal like comes to mind, a lot of like biddy movies from the 60s where it's like, you know,
oh, here, one second.
Ooh. And I,
Sorry, people who keep crashing into each other. Okay, now we're good.
Yeah, but I think that what typically for me is like a female-centric sort of relationship like this is like it's typically about youth and beauty, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like All About Eve, another one, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about like taking her thunder. What I love about Whiplash is it's just a movie about a guy who just wants his mentor to say, "You did good." That's all he wants. And he won't give it to him. And he literally gets in a car crash and kicked out of like his little jazz band and all the other things that happen in that movie. And it's so wild. And I just loved it because I think it is an accurate representation of that kind of like male relationship. You know, like that's that relationship will like, it'll make him a great musician. But at what cost, you know, because he's going to turn just like him one day.
Yep.
And I thought that was so really cool. And that was a cool movie about like male relationships and like the like if we want to like actually categorize like maleness and femaleness, like that was actually interesting.
Yeah. And it feels like there's I bet I'm going to get like there's no like not a lot of like movies that actually like seriously tackle like toxic male relationships. Cause I feel like whenever, there are movies about that, whenever it's about like toxic men or whatever, it's always like, this is where I sound like a fucking psycho. I promise. But it's like, it's always like, it's never man on man or whatever. And I think that's like very important. It should be told like those stories.
No, totally.
About like the toxic influences of men having on other men.
No, I feel like the only time that men have issues with each other in movies is it always involves a woman. Always. It's like they're being cuckolded. They're cheating. It's always something like that. Or it's like a mafia movie where it's like, you're trying to take my money. Like it's all just very that. It's not emotionally based stuff. And it's not just between the two men. It's like got to involve a woman usually. What I liked about Whiplash is that it was just about their two relationship and this kind of like psychotic, or even like Nightcrawler was cool because of like the relationship he had with like Riz Ahmed's character, you know, was a similar kind of thing, right? That kind of abusive, toxic male relationship. This kind of like alpha, sigma, beta thing that like men do, like explored in an interesting
way. Or even speaking of Riz Ahmed, Sound of Metal, this is a very similar thing of like, he has this relationship with like a person that can introduce him to this new world he's involved with, and he can't bring himself to it.
Right.
Riz Ahmed is really good at this.
Yeah, he is so good at it. But yeah, I think that again, all these things that we're saying, those are interesting. Like these are like interesting points, right? Guess what movie has none of these in it? Birdman. The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. There's just no, like how you don't, who leaves Birdman and has like a discussion about Birdman?
No one.
Like, we're struggling. We're talking about Whiplash more than we're talking about Birdman at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. God. I think the other thing, we already talked about One Take, but I think Michael Keaton is such an interesting figure to talk about.
Yeah.
Because it was this thing where, like, when in that year, it was like, Michael Keaton's fucking back, baby, and he's gonna win the Oscar. He's given us so much great stuff, and he's gonna win, and we've loved him forever. We haven't, you know, liked a movie of his in 25 years, but he's still iconic. And then he lost.
I know. Well, that's the
Eddie Redmayne.
That's the gag, you know. Every year they try to do this, it never works.
Never. I don't think Brendan Fraser's gonna win this year.
Oh, absolutely not.
Dead in the water. Yeah, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
Like, it happened with Matthew McConaughey, and that's because he was in, like, 5 movies in 1 year.
Right.
And he hadn't been like, around who recently?
He's not, like, Michael Keaton been around long, you know? He has Brendan Fraser been around that long, but...
No.
Oh, my God. I just pulled up... Well, do you want to go into what makes this movie gay?
Let's go into what makes this movie gay.
What's
let's
gay about Birdman?
Emma Stone's weird ass bug eyes.
She is in full bug eye mode in this movie, isn't she?
I'm pretty sure they like digitally altered her eyes, right?
Yeah, she got a Alita battle angel for sure.
She looks like, have you seen Puss in Boots yet?
No, girl. It's you so know good. I don't like animated kids movies, right? Like I just don't.
I know you don't.
I don't do it.
But it's so good. I loved it. But like, there's a whole thing about like their cute eyes, their cute puppy dog eyes. Emma Stone has Puss in Boots, the Last Wish eyes.
She does. She does. And I do think that it's pretty gay that she's not good in the movie. Like, I don't understand. Like, literally, the part where she's like, nobody cares about you, Dad. It's like, oh my God, I can't.
Is she the only person not in the... No, she's, like, his assistant. Never mind. I was going to say, she's the only person not in the entertainment industry, but everyone is.
Yeah, it's, like, maybe Amy Ryan's not in the entertainment industry. I don't know.
Amy Ryan, who has 30 seconds of screen time.
Amy Ryan, who's literally given nothing to do in this movie.
For real? It's like, was she just there one day? And they were like, Alejandro's hey, like,
yeah, she
just...
could play Michael Keaton's wife, ex-wife. Cool.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. God.
She's gay too. We'll add her on the list.
We just I love, think the who doesn't critic, love Amy Ryan?
Yeah, she's I love so that good, bitch. Yeah. God Baby Gone.
God Baby Gone, girl. Oh, girl. That iconic performance in God Baby Gone. My holy trifecta so of supporting performances that I only care about. Amy Ryan and God Baby God. fucking Rinko Kikuchi and Babel. And Amy Adams and Junebug. My holy trinity.
Three iconic roles. Like... All should have won the Oscar.
Three iconic three roles in three out of five movies. That means three stars out of five stars.
It's like 2006 to 2010 was the golden era of,
no,
of
no.
this kind of
Take
shit.
Take Rinko Kikuchi out. Put Patricia Clarkson and Pieces of April in there.
There we are. That's
there we
it
go.
Right there.
There's my holy trinity.
That's it.
Yeah.
The theater critic, she's obviously
gay.
Oh,
my God. The, I mean, obviously. I love that she didn't even drink her martini.
Incredible.
Yeah. In that weird ass glass that a martini does not go in. Lindsay Duncan, I thought you were artistically inclined. Respect the art of cocktail making. Okay.
She's incredible.
Love yeah. that bitch. Yeah. I mean, her one scene was fun. Her one scene was fun.
So it's fun. I like whenever she walks out of the play. Not yeah. walked out. I mean, the play was over, but I just love everyone's
she probably got a little bit
not.
Of his, like, fucking nose flesh on her, so.
Mm-hmm.
She had to go to the ladies' room to powder up.
Oh, my God. I just watching this episode of Housewives, and they went to a boxing match, and one of their teeth guards or whatever, like, flew out toward them, and it was so gross. The main reason we're talking about this, not because it's part of an Oscar series... Not because, you know, whatever, Birdman is a straight first movie. It is a specific review.
The most iconic review of the 2010s, I think. So important. The
rest in peace, The Dissolve.
The Dissolve,
every
the pitchfork
day,
of movie criticism that lasted like
every
2 years.
Let me...
I pulled it up,
the exact...
October 16th.
I don't think they had the exact tweet anymore.
Maybe not the tweet, but I have the review up by our king, Scott Tobias.
Get it, honey. Get it, sweetie.
Well, the first line is really good. I don't know if this was the tweet, but the first line in the review is, Alejandro González Iñárritu is a pretentious fraud, but it's taken some time to understand the precise nature of his fraudulence. Oh, man.
Incredible. My favorite thing is when they tweeted about it, I can't find the tweet anymore, but it's basically Birdman is your best picture winner for 2015. Read our one-star review.
Yes, you're right. That's what
perfect.
It was.
Perfect. Perfect tweet. Incredible. That shit, the Dissolve was Pitchfork's gnome leg or arm or whatever. And it was all the cool people from the AV Club, and it was just, like, too good for this world. It was the best film site. Nothing has replaced it since. There's, like, I don't understand why it's gone.
I know, and, like, the reveal is just not the same. No. Do you subscribe to the reveal?
No,
it's
I
a couple
don't,
of critics from the Dissolve's, like, new, like, newsletter that you can subscribe to for free, and they do, movie reviews weekly, but... It's just not the same because, I mean, the site's still up, so people can go on it if they want to know about film from, like, 2013 to 2015 or whatever it was. But, like, it does a really cool, like, essential series for movies they felt like at the time everyone should watch. They would do retrospective reviews for movies as well, which was really cool. The last thing they ever wrote about was Valerie and her Week of Wonders. Oh, Judy Berman. She's one of my faves. And yeah, they just like really like they were like trying to be the Pitchfork of movie reviews. Mm-hmm.
Just
really
didn't work out.
Try to be the end all be all. And
yeah,
it's just
like IndieWire kind of scratches that itch for me, but it's like it's not the same as Dissolve.
IndieWire is like become like PC, like fucking like I hate to say like woke propagandist bullshit because you know that word's getting really misused these days, but it's like, it's really clickbaity now, I think, compared to what it used to be. And it like it's becoming more like a gossip rag than it is like an actual news site. I also like hate David Ehrlich. I just think he's like gross. Like, just sometimes he can string a sentence together for sure. Like, I'm not saying he's a bad writer, but I just don't like him.
So. I like his. I listened to a podcast that he's on called Fighting in the War Room. That's like one of my favorite film podcasts. He shockingly is not the most annoying person on that podcast. That award would go to Matt Patches, who I have a fight with on Twitter, an ongoing fight with on Twitter.
Hell yeah. I love that.
About Josie and the Pussycats.
I also love Tasha Robinson. We disagree on every single movie. Like, me and her.
For real.
I don't agree with her on anything, but I love how contrarian she is and how, like I just miss people being very, like, incisive about what they think about something. It's like Pauline Kael really did, like, leave, like, a void in film criticism, because it's like,
for real.
I don't also agree with her a lot. But, like, I follow the bot that, like, just gives you, like, a quote from Pauline Kael every day. And it's just, like,
to get that.
Oh, yeah, go on Twitter and find that. But, like, it's great because it's, like, damn. Like, she would just say, like, the most, like, fucking insights. She's just, like, this is what I fucking think. This is fucking terrible and garbage. And I'm just, like,
iconic.
Oh, I love it. But, yeah, the Dissolve review, everyone read it. It's great. It's, they gave it 1.5, which is... Yeah.
That's about right.
I think after talking about the movie more, I need to bring it down to a 2. I think I'm just like really blinded by how good Edward is in it. Like, it really blinds me. Like, how I think it blinded everyone else too. That's the only explanation I could think of, is that everyone just thought Edward Norton was so good in this movie that they were like, this movie's great. When in actuality, it's a piece of garbage.
It is. It's terrible. Not even wouldn't watch it on a plane.
I think that this is maybe one of the worst movies we've done on the podcast.
I would have to agree.
But it was not the least bored I've been, or the most bored I've been watching a movie for this podcast.
I'm trying to think what the most boring movie we've watched is.
Let me look through our movies.
Yeah, what a... I mean, Justice League was a fun surprise.
That was a fun surprise, so that definitely... That goes into the most fun surprise category. I was really bored during Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bored during Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Also. UHF. I didn't even finish that shit, bro.
Oh, yeah. Actually, UHF is terrible.
That's the worst actually, movie ever done. Yeah, I think that might be the worst movie we watched was UHF. I don't think I even rated it on Letterboxd. I was just like, I don't even want to put this in my log.
Yeah.
Well, we did pretty good there for a while. None of these are boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are all pretty.
I mean, Skinamarink is...
Well, that's a different kind of boring.
But it's different.
It's a different kind of boring. You know, it's artistic. Yeah. Nightmare Alley. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. No. Nightmare Alley is truly the most
Nightmare
boring
Alley. So the worst movie we watched was EHF. The most boring movie we watched was fucking Nightmare Alley.
That's correct. I think I don't know if it'll make the cold open, but we spent a lot of the cold open talking about Babylon and this weird resurgence it's having. But it's like Nightmare Alley all over again, baby. That's what it feels like. And no one talked about Nightmare Alley now. Like, give it 3 months and you'll get out of your system.
Because what it is it's not the movie. It's the director. It's the director that they're worshiping, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on. It's not that people thought Nightmare Alley was good. It's because they were like, Guillermo del Toro, King. And it's the
There's
same
no
thing
way that
Chazelle.
He can make a bad movie. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he did. And he does. And Pinocchio was bad, too. Sorry, everyone. God.
I mean,
when Pinocchio was like, should I throw myself in the fire? I was like, please. Like, please save me. Like, I can't.
Well, speaking of being a small, sprightly puppet. This is our gay recommendations, where we recommend something a little gayer than maybe we just watched. I mean, there's a lot of movies about Hollywood, but the first one that came to my mind, and I was like, let's do it for your consideration.
Yeah.
The last Christopher Guest movie.
I feel like Waiting for Guffman, too. Kind of like
Guffman, definitely.
For the theater angle. You know, I think Christopher Guest, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the four. Mostly for your consideration and Waiting for Guffman, but like, I think the themes are also present. The themes of Birdman are also present in Best in Show and What's the other one?
This is Spinal Tap? Wind.
A Mighty Wind. Yeah, of like the four main Guest movies.
Right, right. Because that's technically not a Christopher Guest movie. That's a Rob Reiner movie. This is Spinal Tap, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But fuck, that's actual like criticism of Hollywood and fame and the arts that's like interesting.
And funny.
Like, has a point of view and funny.
And actual female characters who are funny and have lines that are good. Yeah. Totally. And it's fun because you could. So Christopher Guest movies fall into that category that I love, that like Nope fell under for me, which is you can watch a Christopher Guest movie and just have a great time, turn it off, go to sleep, not think about it ever again, right? You just had a good time. Or you can watch a Christopher Guest movie and you can actually like, you could like have like a little like discussion afterwards about like the different things that it was trying to like kind of poke fun at and what it was trying to criticize and what it was analyzing. And it's like, that's hard to do with comedy, I think, really hard to do with comedy, to have both. Without it being pretentious, right? And Christopher Guest is never pretentious, you know?
He's never pretentious. They're all, like, mostly improvised, too, which is, like, so fucking cool. Like, that's actually, like, difficult. Like, tricking the audience into thinking is one track, is, like, a one shot. Like, difficult, yes. There is skill involved there, and we applaud Iñárritu for doing it. But, like, basically having four improvised movies, like, with no script.
Yeah.
Also is incredibly difficult.
If they went to battle against each other, like on a battlefield, I think that Christopher Guest having every single one of his actors improv for four movies is much more impressive than Birdman's fake take. It's fake. It's not even real. It's a series of long takes with secret cuts in them.
Yep. Lots of shots into walls, into dark hallways, obviously.
Oh, no. God. You know, I rewatched that movie Stay the other day. Do you remember that with Ewan McGregor and Ryan Gosling?
Is that the one? Is Janine Garofalo in that movie?
Yes, she is. Yes. And it's so bad. But I loved it when I was 14 because Ryan Gosling wanted to kill himself. So that's about it. But it's crazy how, you know, Birdman is so after the fact because Stay came out in like 2005 or something. But like, it's so funny like how that era like is all about like editing tricks. It's like, ooh, what can I do on the computer when I edit? And it's just like, I feel like Birdman is the last dying breath of that like thing of that like, let's just like have like the craziest like editing, like David Fincher in like Panic Room style, like, you know, like let's go into a key that goes into the wall that goes into a sewer, you know. It's like, girl, mama, relax.
Relax.
Nobody wants to be in the CGI like, pipe, you know?
I think the Christopher Guest movies are like feats of editing, because like to take that footage, because you know there had to have been hundreds of hours of just footage, and to like find the correct shots to use.
Right.
He's and like the funniest takes. Like that is also a feat of editing.
Christopher Guest is the comedic Terrence Malick, you know?
For real. For real.
It's like we give Terrence Malick constructs all of his movies in the editing room. Where's that same love and acclaim for Christopher Guest, huh?
Where's his Oscar?
Oh, and all Terrence Malick is doing is like, which shot of this butterfly at South by Southwest should I put next to this scene of Natalie Portman giggling by a river, you know?
But yes, watch Christopher Guest films. They will change your life. If you haven't seen them already,
I would gander to say that a lot of people, I would hope, that listen to our podcast have seen Christopher Guest movies.
God, I hope so. If you haven't seen For Your Consideration, which is like his least successful movie for sure, like compared to the other three, which are masterpieces, it's probably like a B compared to those A pluses. It's still fun. Like it's still like still even his worst movie. Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah. Yeah, I actually haven't
seen
about...
A Mighty Wind either. I've only seen Best in Show and Waiting for
Godot. Oh, A Mighty Wind is really fun. A Mighty Wind is probably the silliest of the four. It's like it's just really silly. But
I love
like,
a silly goose movie.
It's a silly goose movie. I think my favorite, I love probably Best in Show.
Yeah.
Probably Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman.
Best in Show is probably the most popular, and there's a reason why.
It's so fucking funny.
It's so funny.
Everyone is good in that movie.
I think it's because all the other ones have to do with Hollywood, like specifically, or like theater or whatever. And I feel like Best in Show being about like something so niche, like dog shows, is like the most brilliant choice, because it's like we not only get still that same humor about like fame and all these other things that the other films deal with, but it's also, we get to explore the niche world of like dog shows, which is like, we don't get, you know, it's like only like, God, how much of the population, percentage of the population, do you think actively participates in that world? I mean,
0.1%.
Like, more people play racquetball, absolutely, for real. Or play like croquet than like care about dog shows.
Competitive dog showing.
Fucking psych.
I'd love to get into it. I get a lot of cat shows on TikTok.
Oh my God.
Like showing cats.
I think that's more impressive. Like getting a cat to behave is like probably the most impressive thing a human being can do.
Oh yeah. They can't do tricks with it. The cat's not, you know, running up and down ramps and running through hoops and
it just sits there and looks there. Fluffy.
Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, here's like a Maine Coon and its tail features are the greatest I've ever seen. And it's just them talking about how pretty cats are and petting them.
Fucking psychotic. I love it. So we weird.
All right, let's wrap this bad boy up. Don't watch Birdman. It fucking sucks. Dude. My name is Dylan Garcia. You can follow me on Twitter at Dylan Garcia, on Instagram and Letterboxd at Garcia.
And I'm Kirk Van Sickle, and you can find me on Letterboxd and in Twitter at KRKVNSCKLE. And you can find me on Twitter. No, Instagram.
Do you want to start that over?
No, fuck that. Fuck that. This is real. This is real. And Instagram at Kirk_VanSickle. Yeah. I want the people to see reality. Okay. This is who I really am. I'm fucking really stupid.
All right. We love you so much. Don't jump out of a window.
Bye, you douchebags.
You fucking idiot.
So bye. And out came talk. Talk, talk.